Today's show is brought to you by FreshBooks. For freelancers and small business owners, FreshBooks takes the pain out of accounting. Have a question about the service? A real live human will answer every call in about three rings. Get your 30-day free trial by going to freshbooks.com/the MMQB and entering the MMQB. Cam is a literal superhero. They make enough plays. And that's going to be the most interesting part of this game. I think that Denver is going to have a really hard time moving the ball.
So when Cam Newton is at the 50-yard line, he's totally focused on the game, but in the corner of his eye, he can see these little kids coming down to the end zone waiting for their ball.
Lack of focus, just another problem with Cam Newton. Welcome to the MMQB podcast. I'm Robert Mays, and with me is Emily Kaplan. Emily, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's just get this out of the way at the top. This is a weird day to be releasing a podcast. We don't normally release them on Monday, but guess what? Life happens sometimes. And at the MMQB, as part of our Super Bowl coverage, we are driving all the way across the country. Is that correct?
It makes sense. So why not?
I guess that's what we're doing. So scheduling has been not super easy as a result of that. And unfortunately, to create podcasts, you need humans that need to be somewhere at the same time, not necessarily in the same room, but on the same phone line or near the same computer, and that's not always easy to do. So we missed last week, and we just want to throw that out there and also say that we're going to be looking back at last week's games a tiny bit because we didn't talk about them, and also it's the Super Bowl, and you still care. You know you do. So that's what we're doing, and I hope that's okay with you because this is your first time here, and I don't want it to be super weird.
Well, it's already a little weird. We're in a hotel room in Chicago.
Correct. Yeah, just so let's throw it all out there. We're in a hotel room. We're sitting in the same place.
I've got some weird slippers going on. The
slippers are strange. I don't know how to respond to them. I made you take off the weird pom-pom hat you were wearing because it was distracting.
See, I landed in Chicago, and I just assumed it would be really cold, so I bundled up.
It's like 40 degrees here, which is essentially a heat wave. So, you know, eat your heart out, East Coast.
But let's get started, right?
Let's start with the AFC game, just because that was chronological order and I don't really know how else to do things. So I think the game went not the way anyone thought it would. I don't know how other people felt coming into this. I know when we talked about the game on the podcast the week before, it was essentially an exercise in trying to figure out how the Broncos could possibly win. And it started with the defense, obviously, because that's where any Broncos argument is going to start right now. And really, they had the best possible formula. I mean, that defensive front absolutely destroyed the New England offensive line. And they did it in a way that I don't think I've ever seen an offensive line get manhandled, especially in a playoff game.
Yeah, it was the two edge players. It was Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware. And they were just decimating the line. They were consistently disrupting the timing of the Patriots' offense. Brady was sacked four times. What was he hit? Like 23 times. And he was forced into, you know, making some really awkward throws.
23 times is unfathomable. I remember the Cardinals-Packers game where it looked like Aaron Rodgers was just getting his soul destroyed, and it was 13 times. And even over the course of that game, I was thinking, this is not the way an NFL game should go. Getting hit 20 times shouldn't even be a remote possibility, let alone when you're trying to play, when you're trying to go to the Super Bowl. So it just talks and speaks to me about some of the systemic issues that the Patriots have in both the way this team was built, but also in the way they built their teams over the last decade or so. I mean, this is a group where they have a first-round pick at left tackle in the perfect scenario and a second-round pick at right tackle. Outside of that, they have not invested a lot of resources in that spot. And also, unlike any other team in football, most of them value continuity more than anything else at those spots. And New England, even before injuries started to hurt them in those areas, they were willingly shipping guys in and out during games. And it just seems like a bonkers strategy. It's worked for them in the past, but I think for the first time we saw that it's just not something you can do when your talent isn't at the level that other teams have.
And do you know what's the worst part about it? Is that all Patriots fans are going to say is, well, you know, we need to go invest in the offensive line and we need to go draft someone high. We need to use our first round pick to go get someone. They can use that first round pick, right?
Oh, man. The NFL's really interesting place that makes curious decisions at all times. The Patriots do not have a first-round pick because it was cold in Indianapolis. or it was cold in New England, excuse me.
Moving on.
So the Patriots fired their offensive line coach. How would you pronounce his name?
Dave
DeGoog. Dave DeGoogly. DeGoogly Elmo? That's how I'm going to do it.
I think they call him Googs.
Googs makes sense. So Googs lost his job, sadly. The Dante Scarnecchia was the offensive line coach there for years. And I think that I've written about this many times in my former life at Grantland. We talked about it on our podcast a lot. Just the sense that he was an incredible position coach, mostly because the Patriots used to use their offensive line that way. And the fact that they could sustain success while changing personnel so often, while willingly do it, was kind of insane. And I think for the first time you saw that you need an incredibly steadying hand in order to do that, and they didn't have that this year. So I don't blame Dave DeGoogs for whatever his shortcomings were in this job. I think it's an incredibly tough ask, and I'm not at all surprised that eventually came back to bite them.
I'm not at all surprised. I am surprised that he was fired, because I feel like the narrative for most of the season was how amazing a job he was doing of rotating in so many guys with no continuity. They were using probably 4,302 formations, combinations of guys. And I think they, you know, Bill has to throw somebody under the bus. Unfortunately, it was him. And we'll have to see what happens.
So let's get back to the team that's actually playing in the Super Bowl, which we should probably discuss at some point. The Broncos win this game, and they win it on the back of Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, like you said. I also think that Derek Wolfe and Malik Jackson have been awesome this year. And that's the thing about this defense, is that you have the stars. You have guys that are going to the Hall of Fame. But there's just no weak points. I mean, you look across their entire roster. I would say the worst player in their cornerback unit is a first-round pick. And it's just, there's nothing wrong with this defense. Danny Trevathan is maybe the worst player on the entire defense from a talent perspective, and he can play. It's kind of crazy.
The most incredible thing to me in that game was, you know, obviously everyone knows about the Patriots offense is that it runs through Gronk, and for the first half, they shut him down. I mean, they were using kind of this combination of T.J. Ward and Darian Stewart over the middle, and then when Gronk lined up outside, they would use Bradley Roby, and once the safeties got hurt, you saw Gronk kind of be Gronk, but it was really a formula for success that a lot of teams haven't been able to figure out.
And we'll talk about this more next week when we actually preview the game in a nitty-gritty, granular way. But it's going to be hard for Carolina to attack this team, because from a receiver to secondary perspective, Denver has such a definitive, decided advantage on a talent level. So if you're Carolina, you really have to run the ball in this game. And that's the thing about the Broncos' run defense, is that they're really, really good. Even when they weren't the best defense in the league over the last 3 or 4 years, their run defense has always been consistently near the top of the league. So even with all those different looks Carolina throws at you, and the misdirection and the unique ways they run the football, this isn't a team that you can just stomp over. They were fourth in rushing DVOA again this year. So I think that overall, the same way that they won this AFC Championship game is the way they're going to have a chance in the Super Bowl, and it's that if you muddy up the game, if it's ugly, and your defense makes a couple plays, they're going to be in it. And I really do think there aren't going to be a lot of points.
I agree. And I know we don't want to be too forward-thinking here, because why would we want to do that? But
Because we have to record another podcast next week. That's the real.
All right. And even though it's going to kill me for this, but I think that it's important to point out right now is that the Patriots are a very different offense than the Panthers are. But one thing that I think is really going to shine in that game is Cam Newton's cadence. And I think that's a really underrated aspect of his game. Not according to him. I think in November he said my cadence game is like ridiculous or something like that. But, you know, that was really where the Broncos found strength in kind of intercepting that snap counts against the Patriots. And that'll be a really big key going forward.
So will Von Miller being a superhero. So that will also help if he can continue doing that. This is like, we'll get really nerdy here, but I was watching that game, and I think the one sack he had where Cameron Fleming was in the game as an extra tackle, and he had to go all the way around that edge. He's the most flexible pass rusher in the NFL to me. Just the way that he can kind of bend his body and get back to the quarterback. I tweeted that during the game, and some people said Cam Wake. And I agree with that in some ways, but I just think the way that Von is able to stop and then like jump under people, I don't know if I've ever seen anyone move like that. It's kind of insane to watch it happen in real life.
I have a bias towards all Penn State players, so I'm gonna not comment on that. I'm pro Cam Wake all the time.
I forgot about that. Even though his name was Derek Wake at Penn State,
because he led his secret life for like 4 years. He's the most fascinating guy in the NFL.
It really is. I think that he might be a different person. I think there's a chance he just assumed a different identity and try to pass himself off as the old.
I think he's currently working in that suburban Maryland office space right now. That he maintains that life.
So let's get to the Broncos offense a little bit. And obviously it starts with Peyton Manning, because he's Peyton freaking Manning. It doesn't really matter if he's Peyton Manning's bones or the actual version we used to know. the game was fascinating in the sense that it really was a perfect example of who he is in this moment. There are going to be a lot of throws that are just like, oh my God. I mean, the one that Emmanuel Sanders somehow snatched out of the hands of, I think it was Bradley Roby, is crazy. And those are the type of plays the Broncos are going to need to make with him playing the way he's playing right now. But it was interesting. So yesterday during this road trip, this is going to be an amazing name drop and an amazing plug for what we're doing. I'm talking to Jared Payton, who is Walter Payton's son, and we were talking about the game, and he said that the way that Payton is playing right now, the arm strength is very clearly a problem. But it's very clearly a problem when you have a lot of the field to work with. When you're inside the 20, it doesn't matter how hard you can throw the ball. It's more about manipulation. It's more about touch and placement. And I think you saw that on the two touchdowns to Owen Daniels. It's a matter of route combination, him being able to put the ball in the right spot. So if they can move the ball a little bit, when they're near the goal line, he's very capable. And I think that was a really good point and something that definitely came up over and over again during that Patriots game.
All right, that was your really smart take. You ready for my really hot take?
Let's do it.
Okay. Is Peyton Manning going to full Trent Dilfer mode and the 2000 Baltimore Ravens?
So I wrote about the Broncos after they beat Pittsburgh, and I almost put in there something along the lines of Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl once, which is a really mean thing to say about Trent Dilfer and Peyton Manning.
But the comparisons are there. Hear me out. The defense totally was outshined that offense in there. He was a total game manager, and he'll be the first to admit that he has no business leading a team to a Super Bowl.
I would say it's more like Brad Johnson.
Okay,
that's what I'm going with.
Brad Johnson, by the way, can I take a nice little aside?
Sure.
We did
what you need to do.
Earlier this year, I did a oral history of the I'm Going to Disney World commercial, everyone's favorite, and Brad Johnson...
Somehow I missed this, which I'm really disappointed
by. Oh, it was probably my finest work as a journalist, and the best anecdote to come out of it was Brad Johnson, who said that, you know, he's down there on the field, and he has to go do the I'm Going to Disney World commercial, and I guess I had to take a couple too many takes with him, and by the time he's leaving the stadium, the team left without him. So he's stranded there, and he has nowhere to go, and so he starts to hitchhike. And him and his wife, and I think his wife was pregnant at the time, are hitchhiking. And it turns out that the Disney person, the executive, actually was the one to pick him up. And Brad says...
There's no way this is true.
I swear to God. He gets in the back of the car, and he goes, all right, do you mind stopping at the convenience store? I want to go get a 12-pack. So
Brad Johnson is me? Like, is that hitchhiking and, like, asking people to drop him off to buy beer?
Brad Johnson is the everyman, is what we're trying to say here.
Oh, So bring up that both the Baltimore team and the Tampa Bay team is interesting. This is the first time the Broncos have been the best defense in football. So I think that we don't have it ingrained in our minds that this is a historically good defense. And they probably aren't quite to that level. They're not the way the Ravens were or the way the Bucks were or even the way that Seattle's been over the last 3 or 4 years. But it's because it hasn't been sustained. On a momentary season-by-season basis, this defense compares to a lot of those. And I think that that's something to keep in mind, and it's something to keep in mind in the same way Seattle came in and destroyed the Broncos before, in that if you have a defense that is that good, you're always going to have a chance. And we saw that against New England, and I think we may see it again. And a lot of people are going to pick Carolina in this game, and they're going to pick them big. But just the way the Broncos can do that and the way they can short-circuit how you can move the ball, it gives them a chance in every single game.
And what I think is incredible, and maybe this is the last thing we say about this game, is kind of the work that John Elway has done. And just to think about this, it's almost mind-boggling to me. It's the last time they were in the Super Bowl, 2 years ago, they had the best offense in the league. And,
yep.
And now they have the best defense. And it's just kind of the way he found his weaknesses and kind of built this team, I think, is remarkable.
It's also a way to think about how you build. And both of these teams have done it in the sense that they've gotten guys in unconventional paths. But free agency is vilified so often, and it's vilified for a reason. And I think that there are a lot of guys who have moderate roles in some place, and then they come to an expanded role in another one. They get overpaid to be that player, and it never works out. And we've seen that a lot of the time. But what the Broncos did is they didn't pick guys like that. You know, Tlaib left Tampa Bay in unique circumstances. DeMarcus Ware gets cut in Dallas. T.J. Ward is kind of that guy, but he was also a star, and that Cleveland doesn't know what they're doing in any capacity. So I think they found guys that were marginalized for weird reasons and in a way built their team in the kind of way that I haven't seen a team be built recently.
Should we move on?
Sure. What else do you want to talk about?
No, I thought that was a good mic drop.
Sure. Let's do it.
Let's go on the NFC, the game that we were both at.
Okay, yeah, we should probably get to that. But before we get to that, I want to say something. All over America, people are counting down to a huge event that demands everyone's attention. It's not the Super Bowl. It's not the election. It's taxes. For a better way to manage your books and make tax season easy, try FreshBooks, a cloud accounting software designed exclusively for service-based small business owners. It's the personal accountant you've always needed right in your pocket. FreshBooks is fast. You can create and send an invoice in 30 seconds. It's easy for customers to pay online, and FreshBooks clients get paid five days faster than average. Have a question about the service? Just contact their award-winning support team and get help from real-life humans. They answer every call in about 3 rings. No phone tree, no let me escalate that, no I'll get back to you, just helpful service at the drop of a hat. From landscapers to web designers, your time is better spent a quarterback than offensive line. FreshBooks does all the heavy lifting on invoicing, expenses, and taxes. Right now, FreshBooks is offering my listeners 30 days of unrestricted use totally free. And you don't need a credit card to sign up. To get this 30-day free trial, just go to FreshBooks.com/the MMQB and enter the MMQB in the How You Heard About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/the MMQB and enter our promo code, the MMQB. All right, we were both at this NFC game. I don't know how much of it you watched because you were writing a very interesting story about the Fox broadcast team. I watched all of it, and it was kind of fun, but also kind of disappointing. I really wanted a good game, and I was so excited to be at this one, and then it was kind of a dud.
You're absolutely right in that I was watching Troy Aikman watch this game for a lot of the time.
I'd rather would have watched Troy Aikman watch this game, so I'm kind of jealous.
But so why don't you refresh me and tell me some of the big takeaways you got from it, and I'll chime in.
So football is a game that often escapes my intellectual grasp. But the way I understand it is that throwing the ball to the other team is a bad thing.
That's not good.
And Carson Palmer threw the ball to the other team a lot. And then he also fumbled the ball onto the ground. I think that's what it's called. And the other team picked it up twice. So when you have the ball and you give it to the other team 6 times and the other team is really good, I think it's going to be hard to win the game.
And, you know, what I thought was interesting is kind of leading up to the game and kind of reading between the lines of what defensive coordinator Sean McDermott was saying is that they were, I think, really scared about their secondary of how it would hold up. That's obviously, you know, besides Josh Dorman, the team's total Achilles heel. You know, they have Cortland Finnegan and Robert McClain, who we don't have to go into their credentials. We just need to know that they're not exactly the Legion of Boom. And I think that they were scared of going against Michael Floyd and John Brown and all the ridiculous receivers that
He's no love for Larry Fitzgerald, huh?
And then, you know, Larry Fitzgerald in the slot and all these ridiculous receivers that Steve Keim has kind of accumulated. But it didn't really matter. You know, I think it was either A, the front seven was so dominant, B, Carson Palmer just shot himself in the foot, or C, you know, I don't know. What's C? Tell me what C is.
C is probably, I don't know, Carson Palmer's finger was hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably the thing I would go with, is that he was more injured than he wanted to let on. Which I think is possible. He denied it after the game, but he just seems like the type of guy who always would. There's no morning after report that Carson Palmer was hurt, which we've had with other quarterbacks in the past. So
how much of a stand-up guy is Carson Palmer? I mean, I think everyone might have seen those shots of him in the locker room answering every question, but I know that I saw, you know, the whole team, you know, getting their little snacks before they headed on the bus. And there was Carson Palmer talking to anybody who would come up to him. Like, there was a security guard who came up to Carson Palmer and he was just like, hey, bud, what's up? After the worst game of his professional life. So
I feel bad. They really ran into a buzzsaw. I think that's what this Carolina team is becoming. Their ability to just jump on people and destroy them is really impressive. And I think what you said about the secondary and Sean McDermott being a little worried about it is interesting. This team is so insanely well coached on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball. But when you look at the defense and just the way that it's been all year, Jared Allen comes over from the Bears midseason, plays fine. Charles Tillman gets cut by the Bears, can't come on anywhere else, started for them for most of the year. Roman Harper was a punchline during his last days in New Orleans. Their ability to find guys no one wants and turn them into real-life starters is incredible. And I think it's a Rivera thing, but it's also a McDermott thing. And they're so well coached and so malleable in how they play. And I think the way that they approached the game early on, it was clear that they didn't feel good about their secondary because they blitzed a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what they normally do. I think their blitz rate was like 27% of dropbacks during the season. It's about league average. They're not a team that does that a lot. But they were comfortable doing it just because they're so in sync.
It's like overcompensating.
Absolutely. But a lot of teams, if you step outside of who you are in the biggest moments of your season, it's going to come back to bite you. But they're so talented and so in step that they're able to do that and not lose a beat. It's kind of crazy.
What I think the play that I think kind of is a microcosm of what's going on with this defense right now actually occurred the week before. It was against the Seahawks. And I think the trend that you're seeing now is that teams just aren't throwing to Josh Norman. You know, their propensity for playing zone and he doesn't go man-to-man, but Russell Wilson didn't throw to Josh Norman's way until 5 minutes left in the first half. And I think Josh Norman was really bored. And then you saw him in the second half and he's, you know, he's in zone coverage. He's kind of hanging shallow and Marshawn Lynch, his route goes in and Josh Norman just goes for it. He sees a lane and he charges after Russell Wilson and he sacks him. And after the game, we're talking to Josh and Josh goes, you know, that wasn't my assignment, but I just saw it, you know, and I went for it. And afterwards, Rivera wasn't pissed. He goes, that's what we want our guys to do. So I think you're right in that they're incredibly disciplined, but they also just kind of let these guys play and they give them trust. And that was the perfect example.
It's just a defense that eats up space in a way that I can't really remember. The Seahawks cover ground better than any defense in the league, but the Panthers take ground better than any defense in the league. I mean, you see the way that Thomas Davis, remember that throw? He was in the middle of the field, and there was kind of a little swing pass that he tracked down on the sideline, or the play when they tried to toss it to David Johnson down near their own goal line, and he just ate him up for a six-yard loss. The way that he and Keekly and even guys like Kawan Short just kind of teleport – it turns them into a team that you can't throw the ball in front of. So unless you have an offense that can throw it behind them, you're really going to struggle. And unfortunately for Denver, that's not the type of offense they have.
And how about KK Short teleporting? I mean, he slithers through guys. I don't know how he does it.
I'm in the process of trying to write about him, just to drop that. And I'm thinking, I've been watching a lot of him and just like being around him a little bit last week. He is not a slim man.
No.
Just very wide-hipped, kind of in the way that Terrence Knighton is.
They're not roast.
He's a little bit. I mean, Terrence is a little bigger. He's had problems with his weight. I think we all know that. Yeah, Kwan's not that big, but he's big-hipped in that way. And Terrence is a run stuffer, and that's what the way he's made his money. Kwan Short had 11 sacks this year. The way that he's built and the way that he moves are incongruous. Like, it doesn't make sense when you think about them together. But I think that that's what probably sent him to the second round of the draft and what has allowed him to be kind of a guy that's been a little under the radar to get 10 sacks is that he doesn't look like that guy. It's kind of like Jarrell Casey in a weird way.
Sure. And now we read your beautiful story, which I think captured a lot of your very sentimental feelings. And I think you had some really poetic tweets, but what is going through your mind when Thomas Davis leaves the game?
Just heartbreak. Everything that guy has been through and just knowing and not knowing. But I wrote this is a weird comparison, but I wrote about Denario Alexander in college, and he played at Missouri when I was there, and you know he had a nice little stint with the Chargers at one point. He tore his ACL 3 times, and I went with him through his rehab for another knee injury, and just kind of getting into the psychology of what it's like to do it the third time and how it changes with each time. So I think I have kind of an understanding of the way your mind works as it's happening to you, and knowing what it probably took for him to come back from the third one. And knowing that he had to walk off the field in the biggest moment of his professional life, it's unfortunate. Think about like if you broke your hand and couldn't work for 6 months, like it would be really hard if it's something you love to do. And that's the thing is that the game can be snatched from these guys in a way that's completely unfair. And I don't think we really can understand what that's like.
I absolutely can't.
I mean, I like doing what I do, and not being able to do it would suck, and not being able to do it in front of, I don't know, how many people watched that game?
45 million on TV.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, you would know, right? So it's crazy.
You're welcome, Fox PR.
And I really do hope that he gets to play because the Super Bowl without him would not be the same. I think that team would tell you that. They all love him.
And if you think of how far this team has come and how this team was built, I mean, he's the guy who's been there the longest. I mean, just think of, he was there the last time they were in the Super Bowl, correct?
No.
No.
He was there the last time they were in the NFC Championship game.
Okay.
Yeah.
My bad. He was not there. He did not have to win as Janet Jackson.
No, he did not, sadly. He's not that old. It'd be impressive if he was still playing. The last guy from that team was Jordan Gross, I believe.
Sure. Okay. Who also does not quite look like himself these days.
You know?
He looks great, though.
Good for him. Looking great. He's got a nice podcast. Really enjoy his work. But we want to get to the Carolina offense at all. I think that it just kind of speaks for itself at this point. Cam is a literal superhero. They make enough plays, and that's going to be the most interesting part of this game. I think that Denver is going to have a really hard time moving the ball. What Carolina is able to do offensively is probably going to be what determines this, and I'm not sure how much success they're going to have.
There's two things that stand out when I look at Carolina's offense. There's many things that stand up. One, I do not want to hear anymore that they lost Kelvin Benjamin and no one knew what to do and poor them and woe was them. I mean, they made Greg Olsen the guy. You know, he's the guy. And Cam threw to 7 different receivers.
Yeah, but all those receivers are bad. Like,
but he made them good. Philly Brown's 86 touchdown catch. Like, the fact that Ted Ginn, a career special teamer, can revive his career with Cam, I think that's special, and I think that speaks to Mike Shula.
That's what happens. We talked about this a lot, and me and Benoit kind of nerd out about this. Just the way that Arizona and Carolina's offenses are coached, it's very different the way that they make things happen, but it's no less impressive on either side. All the different ways Carolina runs the ball, and just their offensive line is not good in the sense of like talent by talent. Michael Orr is a guy that Tennessee didn't want. Mike Remmers is a guy that was on a practice squad. Andrew Norwell was undrafted. These are guys that weren't high-profile, high-pedigree players, but the way they work together and the way they give them advantages and angles in the run game, it's an immensely talent. Like, it's just – they're so smart. It's such a smartly coached team on both sides of the ball, and I think that's the underrated part of this. Cam is the MVP. Luke Kuechly is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate and maybe the favorite, but they also put themselves in the right positions and all the way across the board.
I'm glad you brought up that offensive line because – it's one of those things where they've totally overachieved. And if you look at their individual members and if you look at their matchups next week, say it's like Norwell versus Malik Jackson, Trey Turner versus Derek Wolfe, Remmers versus Von Miller, like all of those just sound like incredible mismatches. But when they work together, they're good. And there's something about it. And I don't know what it quite is. And maybe you need to nerd out on me right now, but their individual members aren't great. But whatever they're doing, and maybe it's the misdirections and all of that, it's really protecting Cam and allowing him to do so many of the things that they do well on offense.
There's no doubt. And I think the way that they put themselves in the right spots is part of it. Trey Turner is a monster. Like, that also helps. He's one of the best guards in the league now. Ryan Khalil is finally healthy and playing well.
Sure.
So when you have that kind of collection of talent in the middle, and then you just kind of fill it out on the outside with guys who are in step and on the same page. And also, we go back to the Patriots, continuity. They've had the same line the entire season, and that matters. When you can have guys play together and there's shorthand communication and everything else, you can overcome a lack of talent because everyone's on the same page to such a degree.
And one other thing about Michael Orr, and I feel so bad for Michael Orr, and I consider this my public, you know, personal apology to him that all week he's going to be asked about the one thing he doesn't want to be asked about, and that is some movie with Sandra Bullock in it. But I think that he was misused in Tennessee, and I think that kind of going back to his natural position has been really good for him.
Yeah, it has. And there are better players around him. And they're sure. Just, the coaching is just better. I mean, this is a team that whatever the opposite of Carolina is probably the situation that's happened in Tennessee the last few years. I mean, it's not a place where players are maximized. And the opposite is true of what the Panthers are doing. Do you want to get some of these Super Bowl props that look insanely weird? And this is one of my favorite parts of this time of the year.
Yeah, so this is my fun idea because I figured if we were looking backwards, we should also look forwards. And
podcast professional Emily Kaplan.
You know what? Some would call me a rookie. I'd call myself a seasoned vet. But we have these incredible odds provided to us by Bovada, but they're not the types that you would expect.
No, I mean, this is the nature of the Super Bowl, is that you can get so weird because everyone is paying attention. What is your favorite one of these?
Oh, that is a great question. Let me pull them up really quickly and I will tell you. Why don't you begin?
So there are a few of these that are the same every single year, right? The color of the Gatorade, not interesting. Which song will Coldplay play first? That I find interesting.
Is that even a question? Is that like a debate? Is that a thing?
Well, you can bet on it. So apparently there are divisive opinions. I don't know what Adventure of a Lifetime is. Is that a new song? I'm not like super into Coldplay right now. I listened to Fix You like 45 times the day before I left for college and I cried a lot. That's pretty much the extent of my Coldplay history.
All right. Here's a good one I actually liked a lot. And now I'm not a huge soccer fan. But to me, there's something about this stat that I think is kind of insulting. So what will be higher, Arsenal total goals on February 7th or Peyton Manning touchdown passes?
I have no idea how many goals a game Arsenal scores, but it does seem like it's not enough.
Is it negative? Can it be negative?
I don't like, yeah, I have no idea how many goals are scored in soccer games. It's like typically like 2-1. How does this work? So they're saying Peyton Manning will throw, I would say the over-under is 2 then, if they're putting it.
Give it 1.5. I'd give it 1.5.
I mean, there's a chance he does not throw more than 1.5 touchdown passes. I think that's actually a pretty good chance.
All right, here's one that I just don't even know how one would bet on. what color will Beyonce's footwear be when she comes down the stage for a halftime show?
Oh, that's incredible.
So,
what's the favorite?
You ready for this?
Is it gold?
No. Gold slash brown is the second favorite at 5-2.
Gold slash brown. Those aren't the same.
I would take that one because that's like a 2-for-1. That's a steal. Black. Black is number one.
There's no way she's wearing black shoes.
Are you going to go with silver slash gray from 19-4?
That would be my other pick. Well, how much? What is that?
19-4.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's my pick.
I think I'd go for any other color, 7-1.
7-1 is good.
Yeah, that encompasses green, orange, multicolor.
Multicolor. How many aside from the slippers you're wearing right now, how many multicolor pairs of shoes?
Those
do you
are
have?
Three colors.
Yeah, they're multicolor. That's what I'm saying.
Fair. All right. Should we go to more of the football ones?
So let's get to those a little bit. One of my favorites is picking like a really big, long shot to win the MVP and rooting for it all game. So 2 years ago, I picked Cam Chancellor to win the MVP, and I think it was something like 35-1. And for a while, it looked like I was gonna get it. I was like, this is happening. So that's one of my favorite things to do every year. My favorite on this list, the MVP is a lot of narrative. Obviously, it's something people vote on. So I think that among the group here, the one that I'm looking at and staring me in the face, DeMarcus Ware at 33-1.
Ooh.
First Super Bowl, Hall of Famer. If he has a big game, I think they tilt it that way a little bit. So that's the one I would go with.
I don't understand how Ted Ginn can be 20-1. Can someone explain that to me? Jonathan Stewart is 22-1, but Ted Ginn, my friends, 20-1 odds.
Maybe a punt returner or something.
If you are interested in losing money, if that's your thing, here you go.
Desmond Howard won a Super Bowl MVP.
Emily Kaplan, free advice.
There are a few other ones here. Most of the broadcast ones are interesting. If Steph Curry is shown on TV, what will he be wearing? Not how many times will Steph Curry be shown on TV. So his personalized Steph jersey, the Panther Steph jersey, is 1-1. No jerseys, 2-1. I'm throwing that out. He's absolutely wearing a jersey. Any other Carolina jersey is 5-1. I like that one. I don't think he's going to be wearing his own jersey to the game. Maybe I'm wrong about this.
I think that'd be a little out of character. I mean, you know him better than I do. Come on.
He and I have had a 1 5-minute conversation.
Right. So you know him better than I do. How about this one? And maybe this is just too much math for me right now, but there's a cross-board bet, but I think this is also cross genre. Trump's percentage points in the New Hampshire primary higher than the total points scored by the winning Super Bowl team.
That is not a number I know, so there's no way I could even.
Can we phone a friend here?
No. That is my ruling on that. No, we absolutely will not.
Okay, here's another good one. Tiger Woods' first round score at the 2016 Masters or Emmanuel Sanders' receiving yards?
I'm going Tiger's score will be higher.
Okay. No faith in the Tigger.
No, it's not no faith in him. I just don't think Emmanuel Sanders is going to have over like 75 yards.
Yeah, that's true.
Tiger's probably going to shoot close. The Masters is pretty low scoring these days, though. So, I mean, even if he has a good round, you think it'd be 68? I'm going under that for Emmanuel Sanders receiving yards in this game. Carolina's defense is really good. Okay. Yeah. So, this one's interesting. I don't understand the logic here. Will the announcers mention Gary Kubiak was John Elway's backup during the broadcast? Yes is plus 120. So the favorite is no. I feel like that has to come up at some point, right?
Easy money.
Like, all Jim Nantz cares about is narratives and everything else. There's no way that he's going to just let that one slide.
Okay. I also don't quite understand who's regulating these. For example, one of them is, how many wings will Buffalo Wild Wings sell on Super Bowl day? The over-under is at 12 million.
Who's keeping count?
Also, like, is that wings eaten? Like, I feel like a lot of wings are left on the table.
Not with me, but I assume that some people are able to control
people
themselves.
Over order.
Yes.
How many times will Archie Manning be shown on TV?
I would say.
What do you think the over-under is?
Is it 1.5?
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I would say it's probably going to be 1. I mean, he's not John Elway's backup quarterback. So
Here's a sad one. How many times will John Fox be said during the broadcast?
I think that probably is 0. I honestly do.
Really?
I don't see it happening.
Come on, that's easy narrative.
Whatever. Poor John Fox. All right, so this is my favorite one. This is the one I'm going to end on. It's mostly the reason I like these is because it's fun to root for them. Will Luke Kuechly have a pick six is plus 600.
What?
On a math level, that's not good enough odds, but it'd also be so fun to root for.
I would totally root for that.
All right, that's what I'm putting my money on then. The money I don't have. The imaginary money I'm putting on this game, I'm putting on, will Luke Kuechly get a pick six?
All right, here's the cutesiest one. You ready?
Let's do it.
Will the Panthers, who scores his first touchdown, give the ball to a boy or a girl?
I'm going with girl.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why. Just a gut feeling.
A little rich girl who got a, you know, nice
end
zone seat.
That's a good point. How many children are sitting in the front row of the Super Bowl?
Well, is it going to be like it is at Bank of America Stadium where the ushers just let them come down?
Oh, is that how it is?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the coolest thing to me.
I forgot this is another area of expertise for you.
This is my area of expertise. But the coolest thing I was doing in this Fox story where I embedded with the broadcasting crew for their whole weekend was the production meetings. And that's kind of like the sacred area for them. And one of the coolest things was, you know, they're asking Cam about the footballs, la-di-la-di-la. And I think it was Buck asked him. He's like, you know, can you see the kids gather? And he's like, yeah, I can. And he's like, you know, when you're going the red zone. And Cam's like, no, I can see them when I'm at the 50. And they're like, the 50? So when Cam Newton is at the 50-yard line, he's totally focused on the game. But in the corner of his eye, he can see these little kids coming down to the end zone waiting for their ball.
Lack of focus. Just another problem with Cam Newton. I'm picking the Broncos. It's over. That's going to put me over the edge.
Is this where we end the podcast, Robert?
I think it is when I start making fun of Cam Newton and not really meaning it. But yeah, that's all we got because this is a weird time. And we're going to actually preview the game in depth in the coming week. But we need to do something, and I'm glad we got to do it together. This was fun.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. We will we'll be back next week breaking down the game. We want to thank our producer, Dan Friedman, of course, our researcher, John Daigle, and as always, thank you guys for listening.
Emily Kaplan, the one-hit wonder like Timmy Smith.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.